Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by anybody. I am joined by you guys. You are sitting here in my office. This is actually, man, I think I have like two more shows that I'm going to record in this office before I move to a different office. So that's kind of fascinating. That's kind of fun. Fair warning, though, the home that we're moving into next is all either tile or wood or whatever. So it's going to take a little while to get those acoustics all set up. That'll be in a couple weeks. But for right now, the focus is on your guys' questions that you left in iTunes. I greatly appreciate them. They help the show, and they help me get us. It's a day of content that you guys help me create. So hugely appreciate that. Keep those questions coming. Let's dive right in, though. We have a ton to get to. A lot of you guys weren't particularly happy with the loss Saturday night to the New Orleans Pelicans without Anthony Davis. Rightly so. Let's start, though, with this question from Laker Nation Forever. Hey, Anthony, love the show. Kind of have a three-part question. What is your favorite Lakers moment post-Kobe, pre-LeBron? Mine is Larry Nance Jr. dunk on KD. What do you think the Lakers record will be after the All-Star break? And last question, when you are not watching Lakers basketball and doing this podcast, what is something you love doing with your off time? All right, so favorite moment post-Kobe, pre-LeBron, so the tanking time. I would probably say when Byron was fired. That was a pretty cool day. It was. I think back then I was still doing a live show on YouTube every so often, and Jen hopped in here, and or not here. We were still in La Habra Heights, but we were. Jen hopped into the office or whatever I was using to record back then, took a shot of Fireball with me and then dipped out. So that was kind of fun. That was pretty cool. Other than that, in terms of like actual basketball, that Nance dunk is pretty incredible. But the Lakers have beaten the Warriors a few times over that stretch. And that's always fun, given how bad the Lakers have been, to still pull off wins against them. Where, you know, that was always fun. The Marcelo Huerta's Catalyst game ranks the highest among those. And then just in general, always, it's you know, the Lakers have been bad, so they've had high draft picks. So those trips out there to Vegas for Summer League have been just incredible. I said this last show too, but those are the best. What do I think the Lakers' record will be after the All-Star break? I would probably say about 500. They're a 500 team. They're a mediocre team. Mediocre to bad team right now. And Lonzo's injury is really concerning. I'm not positive we'll see him back because by the time he might be healthy or the Lakers consider him healthy, the Lakers might be out of the playoff race. And at that point, you know, you bring him back for what exactly, right? So we'll see. But yeah, it's kind of a bummer the way that it looks like this second half of the season might play out. And then I might have answered this whole question last week, but whatever. Things that I love doing with my off time. I said I like golf. I like wine tasting. That's a big favorite of mine. I really like to cook. I've developed a taste for cooking. So it'll be nice getting back into the off season here and being able to really cook. I'm a huge barbecue guy. I love doing steaks. I eat my steaks abnormally rare, which is a weird thing about me. That's just that they're so much better that way. So much more flavor. All right, next question here comes from Dion Martin. Hey, Anthony, congrats. Yep, that's it. I definitely hadn't answered all of these last week. But anywho, hey, Anthony, congrats on the baby. My first is 2.5 months old, and it's easier than you'd think. Don't let anyone around you or everyone around you try to scare you. It's amazing, man. Congratulations. I appreciate that, man. It's a blessing. I still kind of pinch myself every day. Reason for the most of your time, I saw your J. Cole take on Twitter. Anthony something Irwin, explain yourself. Love the show, not hating, just elaborate for us all, please. Congrats. So my take on J. Cole, I don't know. Maybe I'm no, I know I'm old. So I just rap from back when I was a kid and growing up, I just consider better the Tupac's, the Nas's, you know, early Kanye, you know, stuff like that. So I don't know. J. Cole reminds me of that guy who took a psych class just a little too seriously. And from that point on, like, is incapable of having fun. And I don't, you know, I kind of listen to music to get away a little bit. And there is a need, obviously, for serious talk and sending messages in your music and stuff like that. It's just, it's always that with him. And it just feels, it gets kind of daunting after a while. That's just me, though. Next question here comes from Neotitus. Why would you have a guy who hates the NBA and the Lakers on a podcast? I'm guessing this is for Dave. That guy was the worst guest ever. Look, I try to offer you guys as wide a spectrum of guests as I possibly can. Now, there's been actual polls posted about the guests that I have on the show. And that one was about Matt. So, you know, I try to keep things fresh. Now, was that a heavier show? Absolutely. I agree with that assessment of it. But you know, for every guest like that, I try to bring somebody on here who is hugely positive about the Lakers. Pete is a lot more positive about the Lakers, when they're good. Than most. So I try to balance this out. I personally, you know, I ride the roller coaster with you guys on a daily basis. It's exhausting, but it's more fun that way. Life is more fun when you're willing to be exhausted at the end of the day. Next question here comes from Ann Karnick. Most importantly, congrats on the baby. And secondarily, thanks for doing the show. I've never been thanked for doing this before, but I appreciate that. It's honestly, it's a blessing. So I'm happy to do it. Here are questions. One, I just listened to Tuesday's podcast and it reminded me of when I'd listened to The Cure's Pornography album in high school. The first words on that album are, "It doesn't matter if we all die." And it just got more depressing from there. I'd listened to that album mostly to think Robert Smith got through this feeling, how bad can I have it? In any event, did you bring Dave on to make us all find you optimistic? Two, what is the Lakers record for after the Fedora giveaway? If we don't make the playoffs, would you, Pete, and Harrison consider hosting a Fedora burning party at that's good at Dockweiler Beach after the Lakers season ends? Jokes aside, all the best to you and Jen on Baby X. May your child never have to deal with a Lakers team that misses the playoffs. That was a fantastic message. I think this is from Norm Karnick on Twitter. So shouts to Norm. No, it's like I said with Dave. Now, look, I don't know what a lot of my guests are going to say. There's very little talking that goes on before we go live. So, you know, to a certain extent, I don't know how these things are going to go. I have a vague idea based on dealings with the person and you know, if it's somebody who is on Twitter a lot, I generally know how people feel about the Lakers. So, you know, I guess the point of bringing Dave on was, one, I think he's really, really smart and he's really, really honest and he cares deeply about the Lakers. So, you know, those three things, I thought make him a really good guest, and he's a really good guy. He's been hugely helpful to me personally. So, and I just like talking to him. So I brought him on there and I saw where the conversation was going to go, and it went to places that I think it's worth talking about, right? It's worth talking about the Buss family as they own the Lakers, and it's worth talking about what might be coming next. From there, you know, at least you get to identify problems, and as they fix those problems, if they fix those problems, you will have charted that progress, and that kind of matters to me. As far as the other couple comments, the fedora thing is great. Harrison would shoot me, I think, if we tried to burn one of those fedoras. But look, if they're the reason why the Lakers season was derailed, it kind of makes sense. They're hideous hats. And then lastly, And then, you know, best of luck on the kid. I appreciate that. The amount of support that you guys have given me as it pertains to being a first-time father has been really humbling. So thanks to you guys for that. We're going to take a quick second here, though, and when we come back, I'm going to keep answering your questions. Yeah, let's keep this thing rolling. All right, so the next comment here is about the show. There's no real question here, so I'm going to move on. But Wade362, I hugely appreciate the compliments there. And yeah, basically the premise of the comment was that, you know, we take trends that go on during an NBA season, and we try to apply those trends and see how the Lakers stack up with or against those trends. So yeah, that's and you know, they also note that we seem to deeply care about the game of basketball. It's weird how much I love this game. I think about it an inordinate amount of time, to the point where, so just quick story time here. Before I was doing this, I come from PR. I come from public relations. I worked for a firm and then from there I moved on to do some copywriting and stuff like that. But whenever I was doing these other jobs, especially while I was doing PR, my mentor, my boss at that job, was in charge of the PR for the Blazers for a little while, and then he was also in charge of he helped do PR for the Dream Team. So he had incredible stories, and he always used to tell me, like, dude, eventually, you know, you realize you're going to have to go into writing about sports, right? Because I was always on my phone. I was still always on Twitter back then. I wasn't formally writing about anything, but I was very active and I cared deeply about the Lakers and the way that the league was going. So that was back then. And then I talked about it. I used to talk about it a ton, whether it was with my family, with my wife, with my friends or whatever. And all of them, my wife especially, were like, just try it. Just give it a go. We think you're going to be okay. You're going to be good at it. And so finally, I took the plunge and I dove into trying to write about the stuff. And it was a trudge. It was tough. It's a really hard industry to try to make it in. But I owe a lot of the success that I've been blessed enough to have to those people who pushed me to do this. And it was, their thinking was, you talk and you think about this a lot anyway, you may as well get paid for it. So, fortunately now I do. So thanks to all those people and thanks to you guys for helping this, journey, wind up being a fruitful one. Next question here comes from LA1056, 5-star review, because I still like the show overall. Listening to Player Grades podcast when you got to the LeBron discussion was pretty painful. You guys qualified everything you guys were saying with him missing time, but it seems like him missing all this time in the AD drama caused you guys to do a heel turn, and I'm not sure why. Your rant on LeBron rang hollow because he wasn't hurt. When he wasn't hurt, the team is doing fine. Instead, he gets hurt, the young guys aren't ready to pick up the slack, and suddenly it's time for LeBron to nut up and act like he cares. The AD trade attempt was always going to happen. Calling him out as a leader based on that situation is silly. Lakers are out of the playoffs because they didn't have LeBron. How they do will have a direct correlation to his health, and I think you guys let pent-up frustration for the team's record and Magic screw-ups out on the best player. If we were in this situation, LeBron hadn't missed time, I would be behind it, but you guys were way off base. Well, we did mention that he missed time. I don't know what you said yourself that we mentioned that he missed time. So I'm not sure what the point of the rant was there. And look, anytime a team falls short of expectations, blame is going to go around, right? It's going to go, shit rolls downhill. So you have the guys at the top. They're going to get some blame. Then they're going to get some of that blame is going to roll downhill and hit Luke. And then some of it's going to roll downhill and hit the best player. And in this case, LeBron deserves some criticism here. He, as a leader, I haven't been particularly fond of the way he's gone about things. Just passive aggressiveness. His comments after the game on Saturday were disgusting. I come from a winning background, and these guys are too used to losing. Like, F you, dude. All these guys were here because of losing. They didn't go through the losing. The losing that they've done, right? Like, Brandon Ingram, the team has improved every year since he's gotten there, right? Same goes for Luke. I don't really... If he comes from this great winning background, then apply some of those lessons that he's learned over the course of that time and actually lead these guys with the ways that you were able to lead those teams that had that success, right? It was gross the way that he phrased things and framed things. It was that wasn't a very good look. And the longer he continues with that stuff, the more the kids are going to look at him and say, okay, yeah, that's why we don't want to meet our heroes. Next question here comes from Initium 73. Hi, Anthony. You're awesome. And I really enjoy the show. Thanks, man. Questions. Should the Lakers make an effort to miss the playoffs since they're a long shot to even get in? If they did sneak in, I believe they would be blown out in the first round anyways. I think getting a first round lottery pick could be more beneficial. In addition, they could reload over the summer with a proper roster for the 2019-2020 season. Thanks again. So they might not have a choice in this matter, right? If they play poorly and they fall out of the playoff race, that's not going to have anything to do with what might be best for them at this point. And technically speaking, you're right, but that's not what this season was going to be about. We didn't head into this year with LeBron thinking, okay, yeah, it's time to see what kind of a lottery pick the Lakers are going to have at the end of the year. No, that's you're supposed to contextualize everything with your expectations going into those things, right? And if the expectation going into the season was it's a bit of an audition, it is an audition year for a lot of the kids and some of the veterans and for Luke and for even the front office, and you see how that season goes over the course of that year. And hopefully by the end of it, you have, you know, maybe a couple playoff wins, if not a series win or two, to be able to point to and say, okay, the Lakers are going in the right direction. That's the complete opposite of, all right, yeah, the Lakers, it looks like they're going to suck, so all right, we may as well just try to make the playoffs now. Like, that, it's just, that seems like a wrong way to approach things, to me personally. Maybe things change if they go on a losing streak now and you start looking at the types of players that they could draft, you know, at 10 instead of 14 or an 8 instead of 12, you know, or something like that. But for right now, the focus is solely on winning and making the playoffs and turning things around and ending this year on some kind of a high note. That to me is a lot more important than the difference between a number 14 pick and a number 15 pick. Next question here comes from R.J. Dobrin. I understand this is a dumb, ridiculous question, but you could trade one Laker for one Viking so that it can make each team better. Who would you trade? Well, LeBron would make the Vikings better, but that would make the Lakers awful. That would make them really bad, right? So you have to try to find somebody who plays a small enough role that you might be able to add a better player on from the Lakers to. You know, you're not going to find a better player for basketball on the Vikings than you have on the Lakers, unless, you know, you trade Lance for, I don't know. But I don't really know how good a lot of those Vikings are at basketball. So, you know, if for a while there, or if Julius Peppers played on the Vikings, then you'd say, okay, yeah, that guy could step in and maybe do some stuff. That would really hurt whatever team. That would hurt the Vikings in this case, right? If you took Peppers off that team. Tony Gonzalez also played basketball. Trying to think. You look through all these guys and you try to find these cross-sport athletes. I probably think I could see Antonio Diggs or not. Stephon Diggs, sorry. I could see Stephon Diggs being good at basketball just because he has great feet. And he's willing to muck it up a little bit. So maybe you trade Lance for Antonio, or why don't I? Oh, I was thinking of Antonio Gates because he also played basketball. But you trade Lance for Stephon Diggs. I think that probably it hurts the Vikings hugely. So yeah, it's hard to find that. That's a fun question. I'd need to think more about it, but it's a tough one to find. QBreezy12. We're gonna take a quick second here, and when we come back, I'm gonna keep answering your questions. You guys have a ton of them. So rapid fire coming up next. All right, the next question here comes from QBreezy12. What was a dumber front office comment? The Lakers' explanation of the Zubats trade, or the Dodgers' Stan Kasten claiming benefits of not spending that that the public doesn't understand? A bonus is the Cubs owner saying they're not spending money because they have none. I think all of baseball is in a really bad spot right now. I mean, this is the Locked On Lakers podcast, so you guys probably don't care too much about what I think about the Dodgers. Though, to be fair, I ran Dodgers Nation for a little bit, so I know a little bit of what I'm talking about. So in sports right now, the things that generate interest tend to be personnel movement, right? Free agency, the draft, trade deadline, the buyout market, stuff like that, right? And in baseball, even that moves slower than other sports. In some cases, in like Bryce Harper's case, it hasn't moved at all, right? And so not only is the sport kind of losing interest in the younger people because the sport itself moves too slow, but now you also have these personnel movement, high concentration personnel movement periods of time that also aren't generating the same kind of interest. And you know, at some point, the owners in Major League Baseball are going to have to look at themselves and say, do we really want to go down that path again where they were found guilty of colluding against free agents? Like that, they're willing to risk that again. That's the biggest black mark almost on, you know, not counting people of color to be able to play sports for a really long time. But in terms of like the modern era of sports, that free agency in baseball at one point was seen as those owners weren't willing to field the best team because they weren't willing to pay up. Like, that's an awful look. And that's where baseball currently finds themselves. So, like, yes, the Zubats trade is stupid, and the explanation that they gave somehow made that worse. But overall, if you're looking at the importance of whatever is going on, big picture, it's that MLB owners are not willing to pay up for free agents. That's just, it's an awful look, and I think it's really going to hurt the sport. It's especially going to hurt the sport in 2021 when the players lock out. Next question here comes from Clayton H27. Say for a second, AD, KD, and Kawhi are out of the question this offseason. Would you trade for Beal, Ingram or Kuz, plus Hart and picks, and signing a guy like Boogie tempt me? Zoe, Beal, Ingram, Kuz, LeBron, and Boogie seems like a solid fallback plan. Congrats on the baby. One, thank you. Look, the backup plans and stuff like that, like, we can get to that if we get to it. But the overall, I think the more important thing to learn or to glean from questions like this is that, like, we shouldn't be nervous about that aspect of it, right? Like, Magic told us the Lakers were going to be back, that he was going to that LeBron was just the beginning. But it looked like LeBron was just the beginning of a really long vacation based on the moves that they made afterward, right? And so for this question here, yeah, sure, like that team would be fine or whatever, but it wouldn't be the team that we were promised. It wouldn't meet the timeline and the promises that Magic outlined out there. And that would be reason for concern. That would be reason for disappointment. Next question here comes from Groove. If you can go back in time and select one Laker legend in his absolute prime and transport him to today's Laker team, who would it be and why? I mean, it's the answer to this is always Magic, because he was just insane. It depends on what you're asking for. So do you want somebody who can win you a title now? Because that's Shaq, right? You put Shaq on this team and the Lakers win a title. If you want somebody to make the Lakers better over a more sustained amount of time, then you go with a Kareem, or you go with Kobe, or you go with Magic. So it depends on what you're asking for. But just generally speaking, I think it'd be so much fun to see Magic and LeBron play on the same team. I think that would just be outrageous. That'd be so much fun. Next question here comes from Moss House. First, my brother, you do an excellent job. Thanks. Your passion for the Lakers, enthusiasm for the game, and refusal to be a simple PR for the organization is refreshing and demonstrates your personal integrity. Thanks. Here are my questions. Will you please do a show explaining how an NBA team, Lakers, function? For example, you mentioned numerous times on different shows that the Lakers have an antiquated organization. They need, this person is paraphrasing, an upgraded analytics department, top nutritionists, and the scouting department has been sidelined by Magic, etc. Share with us a one-on-one course on the front office / organization. Take us through how top teams function and where the Lakers are still operating with an archaic model. Walk through how a coaching team functions. You could do a great miniseries, Behind the Scenes 101. Keep up the great work. One day I hope to shake your hand in person and say thank you. Well, for one thing, thanks for all the kind words. This would take too long to just answer here, but I'll just say, I'll phrase it like this. The Lakers are very good at letting you know about things that they're good at, right? They always take pictures of all of the championships that they've won throughout the year. Those 16 championship trophies are always front and center, or if they aren't front and center, they're somehow squeezed into as many pictures as you can possibly put together, right? And so if we know that about the Lakers, and know that they like to brag about the things that they're good at, then we should be a little nervous that they don't brag about more about their actual organization, right? The nutritionist that you mentioned, the analytics department, like, we don't hear about those things nearly enough, in my opinion. If they really functioned at the top of the industry, like the Lakers should have those things operating, then we would hear about it constantly. We would hear about it all the time, and we don't. And it makes me a little nervous. And I would like for the Lakers to hire people that they're proud enough about to brag about. So that's just a bite-sized aspect of that. But yeah, I'll happily go back, and it's maybe at some point this upcoming off season, or if we have a little bit more downtime, I can show you guys different examples of ways that other organizations have kind of sort of passed up the Lakers. Next question here comes from DC Moore 1990. What healthy lineup are you most excited to close this year? Personally, I'm real excited to see Lonzo, Bullock, B.I., LeBron, and McGee due to defense, rebounding, and transition game primarily. Not just shooting, but I think that's interested to see where that goes. So I don't know if I said this on the show or if Pete and I talked about it off the air afterward for Friday's show. But the lineup that I think is going to wind up being the Lakers' best lineup is with LeBron at the 5, and then you have Lonzo at the 1, Bullock at the 2, Kuzma at the 3, or Ingram at the 3, and Kuzma at the 4. I think that'll wind up being their best lineup moving forward this year, if and when Lonzo is healthy. So that's what I'm most looking forward to. If you're looking for a more traditional lineup, then I think you swap out Bullock for JaVale, and that's probably going to be the Lakers starting lineup. But yeah, the team my one caveat to that is if you are going to have that lineup, then they have to be willing to get out and defend like crazy on the perimeter, and they have to be willing to get out and run. And anytime they get those open opportunities for threes, they have to take advantage of them. And the other thing too is LeBron has to be 100% healthy in order to fully take advantage of the advantages that he's going to have on the opposing center in this situation. We've seen it a couple times here where LeBron was guarded on the perimeter by a center. I think at one point he was guarded by Jahlil Okafor in the New Orleans game and like didn't even challenge him, didn't try to get to the hoop. I thought that was pretty telling of where he's at physically right now. Either that shows where he's at physically and that he doesn't really have it quite yet, or he just didn't feel like attacking Jahlil Okafor there, and And I don't know, you tell me which of those two things make you a little more nervous than the other. Next question here. Wow, we have a lot to go to. All right. I'm going to race through these. Just want to thank you again. This is from Chase Aguiar. Just want to thank you again for coming on our podcast this week. Check that out if you haven't seen it. Was a ton of fun and really hope you guys will come on again in the near future. But my question is how the Lakers came out with a win after the All-Star break. Do you think this is the game that gets them going on a huge win streak? Also, does DeAndre Jordan have a legit shot at happening? Thanks again, man. Have a good one. So this, I would imagine, was asked before the New Orleans game because the huge win streak. I was asked by Josh Lloyd when I did Locked On NBA that'll air tomorrow as well. I was asked, you know, what's going on there? How do the Lakers beat Houston and then come back and lose to the Pelicans? I think that all comes back to chemistry. I don't think these guys particularly like each other. And we saw that report from an agent who represents one of the Lakers still right now that he didn't think or that this player doesn't think that the locker room will ever fully recover from the way that things went down at the trade deadline. So, yeah, that's a concern to me. And I don't know. I hope the Lakers have some kind of streak in them. I think you'd have to wait for Lonzo to come back to see that, though. Because, like, right now, Rondo is not very good, and LeBron can't play 48 minutes. So those minutes that it's just Lonzo on the court and somebody else and the offense is supposed to run there, you're probably going to have about 10 or so minutes of that every game. Those minutes are always going to be a struggle, and the Lakers are going to have to overcome those minutes until they acquire a point guard. And I don't know if there's a point guard out there that they could acquire that would be better than Rondo anyway. So that's worth concerning yourself about. In terms of DeAndre Jordan, I've heard from a couple people now that it doesn't look like DeAndre Jordan is going to be made available. He is close with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and the Knicks want to be able to have their back-channeled communications with those guys. And then I think the hope is also that they have DeAndre Jordan there if they do sign KD and Kyrie this upcoming summer. So we'll see, but I don't see that really happening. Next question here comes from JP Mann. Why is Luke so reluctant to use Mo Wagner? Wagner can play stretch five, especially if LeBron doesn't want to take the physical contact in the sport, in the post. I don't think Luke particularly trusts him, him being Wagner. He's a rookie. He missed a lot of time early on in the season. He might just struggle. I remember I spoke to somebody who gets to see the Lakers fairly often in practice, and he was walking into the facility, and he heard two assistant coaches walking out of it, and the exchange was basically like, man, did you see that? And the other guy goes, yeah, man, that was insane. And this person that I was listening to or that was relaying this kind of scene to me said, he asked the two people who were walking out of the facility, he goes, what happened? And he goes, oh, man, Zubats was roasting Wagner. Wagner didn't even have a chance. And I think that just kind of says something about where Wagner is right now. I don't think he's shown enough in practice to warrant a spot in the rotation from Luke, or else he might have gotten one. But it's also possible that Luke is just not very good at his job and is making a mistake not playing Wagner. So, you know, who knows? Next question here comes from JR61194. Why has Rondo largely been effective since he came back? Does he really only turn it on for playoff Rondo, or is he just slightly washed? He's more than slightly washed. Anybody who expected much at all from Rondo this regular season didn't watch very much of Rajon Rondo the last, like, five regular seasons. He hasn't been good over the course of an 82-game season in a really long time. Now, he can turn it up, and in those moments where he does turn it up, he can be very effective. But even then, his struggles on defense are really, really noticeable. He can't stay in front of anybody. That's why he's not starting right now. It's not to get Bullock in there or not to get extra shooting out there or whatever. It's that the coaching staff doesn't trust him to stay in front of point guards. That's literally what's going on there. And they just, you know, it's unfortunate, but it's also something we kind of sort of should have seen, should have seen coming. Wow, long weekend. Next question here comes from Saul the Kid. Two quick questions. One, who's worse at their job, Chris Webber, NBA referees, or Harrison's fedora? I guess, technically speaking, Harrison's fedora does its job. It stays on top of his head, and it doesn't allow everybody to see how thin his hairline has become. So who's worse between Chris Webber and the NBA referees? I think the referees have a really tough job. I think Chris Webber has a fairly easy job. And Weber is still awful at it. So I'm going to go with Weber for that one. Two, what would you do with a contract like Machado's new contract? Well, I would keep posting this job, but I would do it for free. And I would give somebody a gig that they wouldn't otherwise have. I would probably buy a website and try to employ as many people at that gig as I could. I'd obviously move into a house that has a soundproof studio with all of the best equipment so that the show could sound a little bit better. But yeah, that's essentially what I would do. It's probably not great that I immediately jumped to all work stuff. I'm a bit of a workaholic. In terms of I would travel a ton. I need to go to Italy at some point in my life. Actually, right before we found out Jen was pregnant, we were thinking about going. We were getting ready to plan a trip out there. And then the next day or the next week, Jen told me that she was pregnant, and that kind of nixed those plans, because what's the point of going to Italy if half of your party cannot enjoy Italian wine? So maybe one day, but I would do a ton of traveling. I want to go up north, and I'd like to visit the Seattle area. I'm a huge fan of killer whales. I have an odd infatuation with killer whales, so I'd love to go whale watching. There's actually a fjord in, I want to say Denmark or something like that, or Norway. I forget where it is. But there's a place where you could actually go swimming with killer whales. I think that would be fascinating. I would really like to do that. So those are a couple of the places I'd like to go to, Australia, New Zealand. I would just go all over Japan and go get some fresh Japanese sushi, go to a Japanese fish market. That'd be a lot of fun. So yeah, those things right off the top of my head. Next question here comes from MTallB010. Love the show. I listen every day on my lunch break, and it really gives me something forward to every day at my boring desk job. With the Lakers' recent track record of trying to obtain great players to pair with LeBron, what is your confidence level that they'll be able to do so this summer? Also, what's your favorite movie? Thanks, Mark from Ohio. I couldn't probably find a favorite movie. So, you know, it just depends on the genre that you want me to ask. But movies that stop me in my tracks and I'll always turn on if I see them. It's Sideways is one of those things, one of those kinds of movies. Either of the Godfathers, I think, are really good. I went through a bit of a Western kick a little while ago, so movies like that are really good. So, yeah, stuff like that. Next one, so in terms of what they'll be able to do this summer, how confident am I? I would say it's a coin flip to me. I think I could see them really having a really successful summer and shutting me up, and I hope that that's the case. Or I could see them walking away with Jimmy Butler and DeMarcus Cousins, and they would try to sell me on look at what we got. We are back, and they wouldn't be back. Next question here comes from Corbin Monoxide. Hi, Anthony. If the Lakers were guaranteed to win the lottery and get Zion with the number one pick, if they missed the playoffs, how far would they have to go in the playoffs to make it worth it for you to do that instead of Zion Williamson? Well, they'd have to win a title. Zion is going to be a franchise changer. He's insane. He's going to be so good. And his shot isn't such that I think it's completely unfixable or beyond fix. So I guess technically I'd be fine with really challenging the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. But if you tell me that I could either have you know, a fun playoff run or Zion Williamson, I would take Zion Williamson 9 out of 10 times. He's that good. He's going to be ridiculous. Last question comes from DJ or D Quijas, I think. Do you feel as if LeBron's postgame comments after the Pelicans loss are hinting to him towards wanting Luke Walton fired? He keeps stating that the Lakers are afraid of being uncomfortable. At first, I thought he meant the players, but now it feels as if he is speaking from about the front office, or more specifically, Jeannie, who we know fully supports Luke. That's an interesting spin on things or take on things. I know that he doesn't like Luke. I'm willing to quote unquote report that. It's more of a relay, right? We've already heard reports of LeBron's camp doesn't like LeBron, but LeBron likes, or LeBron's camp likes or doesn't like Luke, but LeBron is all in on Luke. Like, no, that's not how this works. That doesn't happen. If LeBron is this anal about monitoring the narrative that comes out of his camp, he's not just going to allow somebody to just walk out there and fire off a take about him not liking Luke. That's not how this works. So we know that he doesn't like Luke. We know that he would have preferred to have Luke gone before the trade deadline, I would imagine, maybe even before the season. I think he was that annoyed of Luke right from the get-go. And look, I think Luke is in a really tough spot. I really actually feel bad for him. He's hung out to dry. He's just trying to get through the rest of the season. And then he knows he's probably going to get fired, and he's got to figure out things from that point forward, right? So I do feel for him. He's in a spot where he cannot win. That said, he also hasn't done himself as nearly as many favors as he needed to if he wanted to win over everybody and be able to stick around beyond where he is right now. So it's tough. It's tough. I think the thing that rubbed me the wrong way, though, about LeBron's comments is that it again kind of passes off all of the blame to everybody else. I come from a winning background. I'm willing to sacrifice. I'm willing to do all these things. The implication there is those guys are not. Those guys do not come from a winning background, when all of those guys actually kind of sort of do, right? Now, did they win as many NBA games last year as LeBron did? No, but they were all rookies and second-year players surrounded by vets on deals that were about to expire anyway. So this idea of, you know, bashing Lakers culture and comparing it to what he comes from, I don't know if I roll with that. Now, it depend. You know, there wasn't very many follow-ups on as to the culture comments that he made there. I would have liked to pick his brain and see what he actually thinks about the way that the Lakers are run. So he's had two experiences so far. In Cleveland, he was given carte blanche. He was allowed to do whatever he wanted. Friends could come on the private jet. He ran the organization. And that was that. In Miami, it was Pat Riley's way or the highway. And in both situations, he was able to have success. Now, the second time in Cleveland, he brought some of those things over from Miami that he learned there from Pat Riley. And he was given the freedom to apply those things. And as a result, Cleveland had great success the second time he was there. Here in L.A., I think he's still trying to figure out how he's allowed to operate, and we'll see. You know, we'll see how that plays out for everybody involved. I think what the Lakers need to have a real conversation with him about is, all right, we're willing to bend over backwards for you, but you have to be willing to carry your half of this bargain as well. If he isn't going to be healthy from this point forward, or if he's going to sulk for portions of the season, then this partnership isn't really a partnership at that point. And maybe LeBron got into this knowing that it wasn't going to be a partnership, that there's no such thing as a partnership with LeBron James because he sucks out all the oxygen out of the room. So we'll see how that's going to go. I still think there's you know, he still literally has at least 2 years left on his contract. He has a player option beyond that. He has time, and they have time, the Lakers have time, to turn things around. It's all going to start with this next month and a half or so before they try to squeeze into the playoffs. And then this upcoming offseason is going to be a huge test for everybody. It's going to be fascinating to watch while the Lakers are trying to acquire a second star. They're going to be continuing to have this kind of weird power struggle with the team's best player. It's going to be really weird. And you're going to probably get some weird stories coming out of the Lakers this summer. And I'm going to be right here to talk you through them. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast, though. Longer one today because you guys left a ton of questions. As always, I hugely appreciate that. Keep them coming. And look, for those of you who can't leave iTunes reviews, I had a show the other day that was a Twitter mailbag that you guys were able to do to put your questions in for that. I am at Anthony Irwin LA if you want to keep doing that, if we wind up doing that again. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.